Do you zone out a lot, or do people accuse you of not paying attention? Next time, tell them it's not your fault. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be waking you up to what's really happening when you stare off into space after this.
Red alert, Yahoo users. You've fallen in a trap that could ruin your life if you keep using Yahoo.
You consent to sharing all data in your email account with our AI providers, and you grant us a perpetual license to use, display, publish, and publicly distribute your content in any media known now or in the future, and to let other users access and distribute it as well.
Yikes! It's time to switch to StartMail, the only email that's AI-free and private by design. StartMail.com.
Scientists have recently discovered it may be possible to lose consciousness even when you're awake. When people zone out or stare into space, an analysis of their brain activity bears a striking resemblance to the brain of someone in a deep sleep or under the effects of anesthesia. That means you're not fully conscious when you're off in la-la land. When you're in this hazy state, you're not even seeing normally. Your eyes still take things in, but your brain doesn't consciously process what you see. So when you drift away, you're essentially taking a break from experiencing perception. Now, it's fine to do that every once in a while, just not while you're driving. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, reminding you to protect your email privacy with a StartMail account.
This is the Dr. Catherine Albrecht Show.
Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Wave your hand to encourage them. Wave your hand to encourage them. As they march into the palaces of the high and mighty, I, the Lord, have dedicated these soldiers for this task. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. And they will rejoice when I am exalted.
Hello, good afternoon. Dr. Catherine Albrecht here with you on this wonderful Friday afternoon. It's a Good News Friday, and my good news for you today is that I have a very special guest. I am so excited to welcome back to the program Dr. John Van Epp. He is the author of the book that I have been recently talking about, How to Avoid Falling in Love with a Jerk. He also has many, many years, decades, as a matter of fact, training people in better relationship skills, and I am thrilled, Van Epp, to welcome you back to the show. Hello.
Thank you. I'm excited to be back, and I can't believe 10 years have passed since we last talked.
It's been a long time. So originally your book was called How to Avoid Marrying a Jerk, and I guess these days there's a lot of different kinds of relationships, and I guess you want to nip it in the bud back in the falling in love stage long before it gets to marriage. Before we catch up with some of your more recent work, and it's really extraordinary, I want to let people know about it. Let's just talk about the book for a minute. I did a program, I want to say 2 weeks ago, and I was cautioning people to be very careful in the dating stage, whether they are single or find themselves newly single after a divorce at any stage in life, when people are looking for a partner, for a mate, how are they supposed to avoid the pitfalls? Because there are so many psychopaths, sociopaths, narcissists, so many broken relationships, so many people who are troubled out there. How in the world are we supposed to find a partner these days?
Well, I agree. It seems since I started in the mid-90s, I was actually had a counseling practice in Northern Ohio at the time, and I was about halfway through what was about a 30-year practice. And I just wanted to do something preventative because you start to see patterns. You know, when you work with people one-on-one, after a while, you realize different faces, different names, kind of different stories, but similar patterns tend to occur. And maybe from a Christian standpoint, we could say, you know, the devil only has so many strategies. And these strategies keep repeating to cause us to have downfalls, and particularly in relationships. I think relationships are one of the absolute most important areas of life and strongest determiners of how our life turns out, our future, you know, and the person we choose to marry and make our life with. We are truly, as the Bible says, yoked with that person. And where they go, we go in a lot of ways. And if they are stumbling, it's hard for us to stay on our feet as well. So with all that being said, I really wanted to present something that could empower the individual, many times who is on their own, without, you know, historically kind of the family guidance process.
And, right.
I mean, for some people, it's still there. But for the most part, most people kind of hit the road in their 20s really on their own. And then if they're, you know, divorced or gone through multiple relationships and now in their 30s, very much kind of semi-established, if not fully established, but they're on their own. And don't even hear a lot from their peers many times. So it need to be an individualized system is how I approached it. And I thought of two major areas that seem to be primary influencers in that love is blind, right? One of them is a lack of what I call head knowledge. They just didn't see the right, they didn't get to know the right stuff about somebody. So I would hear many people, once they got locked into a relationship, whether it was marriage or just a long-term relationship, and they saw problems and it kept repeating, they're like, oh, if only I knew then what I know now. You know, it's like I just didn't get to know the right stuff. So I wanted to create a system that maximized getting to know the right crucial areas that truly revealed the character and the heart of another person. And then I said that has to be matched with the heart, because I found a lot of people in this whole love is blind said, I saw things, but I just overlooked them. I minimized them. I dismissed them. I guess I was just too much, and then fill in the blank. I was too much in love. I was too close to them. I was sexually involved, and we were too intimate, or we moved in together, or I had just gotten too complicated in our relationship to just break it off. You know, I invested too much. That fill in the blank was what I called a lack of heart knowledge. They didn't know how to manage the bonds of their heart. And so my system essentially in a single statement is how to get to know the most important areas of a prospective partner while protecting and, you might say, ensuring your heart, guarding your heart from becoming overly invested and overly bonded, so that you pace the growth and the bonding of your heart while you explore the right areas. And I found that actually, for the people that followed it, it was a phenomenal kind of like protective, revealing, you know, system. It worked very, very well. So that's what went into the book. It went into the program that we use with people at home called Head Meets Heart. And the instructor-led, where we have certified instructors teaching this in all kinds of settings, called the PIC program, or How to Avoid Falling in Love with a Jerk program. So it kind of goes by the same title as the book.
Is that PIC, like as in your picker is broken, you're picking the wrong people repeatedly?
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. So, Dr. Catherine, I used How to Avoid Falling in Love with a Jerk. Well, as you said, the hard copy when McGraw-Hill published it was How to Avoid Marrying a Jerk. And then we found people, there were some barriers to the title. Some people didn't like the word marry. They're like, I'm not ready for marriage. So we put falling in love. And but I would also say there are some people that have a little barrier to the word jerk. I just use the word because it's just a very generic word for male or female, you know? just that driver that cuts you off, you know, oh, what a jerk, you know, it was just a kind of a generic word to say, hey, here's somebody that you are madly in love with, or you are, you know, really in a strong relationship with, but as time goes on, you begin, and I give actually a clinical definition of the word jerk. It is somebody whose, you know, patterns keep repeating, and those patterns are either, you might say, dysfunctional, unloving. They are things that you have put on the table with the person, and regardless of how they responded to you, over time, they don't ever change. So that change factor is missing, and that's the core ingredient of somebody that's difficult to be with in a relationship. They don't have much of the change factor.
Okay, so it's not so much that you have to find somebody who is perfect out of the gate. You have to find somebody who's willing to work on being a better person?
Well, I think, you know, if we're just talking about what the word jerk meant when I used it, not the five areas. I have like five key category areas to get to know about somebody that when you put them all together, I think you have a pretty robust understanding of who the person is. But if we're just talking about that, I'll give you a quick story. I was training down in South Carolina a group of military chaplains, actually, to become certified in my course. And I went out to dinner after training for the day, and I was going to train the next day. And I'm going to this, it was actually like a taco restaurant where they serve lots of different types of tacos. And there weren't any seats. It was crowded. So I sat at the bar there, and I'm looking around, and almost everybody looks like they're in their 20s or 30s. And it was a Friday night, and it wasn't even. It was like a Wednesday night. So I was like, you know, this is really odd. So do we need to take a break?
Yeah, we're going to, you have me on the edge of my seat. I want to hear the rest, but
I'll finish after the break.
We'll keep everybody in suspense till we come back. My guest is Dr. John Van Epp. He's the author of How to Avoid Falling in Love with a Jerk and a relationship expert with much more to talk about. All right, I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. Stay tuned. We'll be right back for more.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust. Your email is your business, but if it's spied on, hacked, or intercepted, it can fall into the wrong hands. The solution is encryption, a high-tech way to scramble your data so no one can read it. For years, only the technical elite could use this powerful tool, until StartMail came along. StartMail not only lets you encrypt the email you send, it encrypts your entire account. Encryption. It's just one more way StartMail.com keeps you safe.
Righteousness rolling over you like waves in the sea. Peace.
And that is scripture. Beautiful. That's what the Lord gives us. That's what the Holy Spirit gives us. It's one of the fruits of the Spirit is the peace, the joy, the love, the goodness. And that's what we're talking about today with our special guest, John Van Epp, Dr. John Van Epp. He is discussing the extraordinary book, How to Avoid Falling in Love with a Jerk. I recommend that everyone who is dating or has kids who are dating or are in any way considering entering into a relationship, read this book before you fall in love. All right, let's get back to John Van Epp. You were telling me the story of being in a bar. Let me let you get us off the edge of our seats and tell us what happened.
Yeah, it was a taco restaurant. So I was sitting at the taco bar, and I said there was kind of filled with 20, 30-somethings. And so I asked a couple of the people sitting next to me, is there a university? Is this like date night? You know, what's going on here? Because they all look single. And they said, you know, no, but this is kind of like a single night. And once a week, you know, we just kind of crowd in here. And there's probably over 100 singles in there. So anyway, in the conversation, they said, what are you doing here? Because I told them I was from California and I'm in South Carolina at this restaurant. And I said, well, I'm training people in a program I wrote. And they said, well, what's the name of the program? I go, well, it's an instructor-led program where I certify them. They go out and teach. It's called How to Avoid Falling in Love with a Jerk. So all of a sudden, now I have an audience at the taco bar. Okay. And as I talked to them, one of the people I was talking to at that was a woman that was about 31 or 32. And she kind of confided that she had been previously married, and he turned out to be a major jerk. And so she divorced after just a few years. And now she's back in the dating scene. And just you think about it, just a lot of rough relationships happened by the time she's 32. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's the first thing that struck me, like, wow, that's just a lot of life happening to disrupt you. And but anyway, she said something that was really profound that I think is related to your question. Do we just try to find a partner who has this change factor? Is that the key thing that we're looking for? They're willing and able to change. So when I'm talking with her and she tells me this story, she goes, what I'm looking for now is a man that has potential. And I said, well, definitely find a man with potential, but also make sure he's got some actual, right? Mm. You don't just want potential. And she goes this, look around, we're all so wounded. Ooh. And that's something that struck me that is really heartbreaking and sad. I think, you know, because we have not been doing dating relationships well, really coming out of the 1960s, I mean, that was a huge turning point for the whole world of dating and partner. This is when divorce went from really just a fraction of our society up to 50%. This is when latchkey kids started growing up without having kind of that, you know, more secure environment in the home. Not that things were perfect prior to that, but this is when lots of things changed. This is when it became normative for the first time in American and even Western society, normative to have sex as part of the dating process. Prior to that, if people had it, they were kind of breaking the social rule. But now the social rule was you do have sex. And that all started. And as we went from decade to decade, generation to generation, we did dating relationships actually a lot higher risk, a lot more burned, you know, experiences where they felt burned in the relationship, a lot more narcissism increased as you went to the 80s, the 90s, and then into the 2000s. Now we're already 20 years into the 2000s, right? 26. And so all of these things have led to a lot of wounding. And now we have a lot of wounded people doing relationships. And now I said, hurting people a lot of times have a risk of getting hurt again. And a lot of hurt people start to become callous, and then they hurt others. And so we just have this, you know, this current in our dating relationship that we need a movement of singles, especially women, to say we're going to do dating differently than our culture, our mainstream culture. We're going to slow it down. We're going to really get to know the right areas. We're not going to put sex at the front end of the dating relationship. We're going to follow the biblical principle, which has been there for over 2,000 years, right? But we're going to reinstitute it as a modern, you know, research-based principle of how to do healthy relationship formation, how to build a new relationship in a very positive way. And that's really what the book, that's what the program that people teach based on the content of the book, that's what all of that is trying to establish, is a countercultural approach
Wow.
to dating, that and partner selection.
We need it.
I know. It,
desperately.
Healthy relationships, you know, if you do relationships in a more healthy, positive way, a biblical way, you actually begin to have relationships become an incubator of character. They always are. When they're done poorly, they're an incubator for poor character. When they're done positively, they're an incubator. They're a generator. Iron sharpens iron. That relationship, even if it doesn't work out, the two leave feeling like they have, you know, actually gained something good rather than feeling wounded from a relationship that they were not doing well. So those are the kind of the two major areas, the head and the heart.
Couldn't agree with you more. And we are due for a relationship overhaul. One of the trends that's going on worldwide is people are no longer getting married. They're no longer even dating. There is an epidemic of young people now in their 20s and early 30s who are not even interested, or maybe interested but have no idea how to be in a relationship with the opposite sex. And so we've got all across Europe declining birth rates. We've got all across Asia, Korea and Japan, declining birth rates. We've got people afraid. And I think you're right. It is the wounding. We've got this generation who grew up with divorced parents who, you know, my generation, we were the latchkey kids. Our parents in the 70s were the first generation to go through widespread divorce. And that sense of abandonment. I know people, young people today, idealize the 1980s as having been this wonderful time when there was no technology and screens. And they're even playing vinyl records these days as kind of a nostalgic way to try to recapture that. But I got to say, those were not the optimal years for young people to grow up, because all of our parents, I remember, it was just waiting for the other shoe to drop when your parents would sit you down and have the talk that they were getting divorced. And so our generation grew up, had kids, and it's the wounded raising the wounded. And this young generation in their 20s and early 30s is saying, I don't want to repeat that. So I think there's a lot of confusion, a lot of fear. And of course, you add artificial intelligence into the mix, which is a topic I talk about a lot on the show. And you have people actually finding it safer to date an artificial intelligence, safer to date something that doesn't even have a heartbeat, that can't, doesn't even have a physical body, cannot take you to a restaurant, cannot make you a meal, can't do anything other than simply say the words that you want to hear. And to hear young people talking about the reasons why they've turned their backs on real relationships and turned towards this artificial companionship that's empty and hollow is heartbreaking. It really is. So let's talk. We're going to come up on a break here, but we got a couple minutes. I want to talk about the five key areas, because I want to encourage people to get your book. And then as we come back for the second half of the program, I want to talk about some of the extraordinary trainings that you're doing. So let's start with the five key areas. What is it that young people, or older people for that matter, or even people in their 80s? My grandfather, as a widower, got married in his 70s. So at all ages, we're looking for love. What are the key factors that we want to consider in the people that we're looking at?
So, you know, first of all, let me say, in the process of getting to know, I say there are three T's. You got to talk about things. You got to be together with a person to see them into different moods and different situations. Mm. And then there's a requirement of time and, you know, the old onion where you peel off a layer and then you got another layer and you peel that off. And getting to know somebody and kind of getting to the heart, you know, to the depth of their character is a peeling process that happens over time. You can't stay up all night and talk for 12, 14 hours straight and feel like you really, really know the person, because you don't have togetherness. You haven't seen them in different situations. You haven't seen them in different moods. Their you know, actions may contradict how they talk. Plus, how they talk for those 12 or 14 hours, you can't slowly, you know, you can't peel everything to the core. You've got to do it over time. So as much as we want everything to be done quickly and we, you know, are pretty fast paced, we get impatient when our phone, we click on something and it doesn't come up in half a second, we get impatient. So we have to completely, you know, go back to the reality that relationships to be formed in a healthy way requires good in-depth talking matched by different experiences together and different moods and different situations, but it's got to be done over a period of time, a process of time. So,
you know what that's reminding me of is the slow food movement, right? We're moving away from the fast food that's making us all sick and getting back into the slow food, the preparation, the time spent, the care, the concern, and the patience. And I love the idea of that same slow food concept in relationship formation. I think that is very wise. So that's
what were the three T's? We want everything. We want everything. We want to lose weight fast. So we want to, we want to come up with, we want to eat food fast. And everybody knows that most of all healthy aspects of human life requires that principle that you've got to do something on a regular basis, deepening it
and be
over
consistent.
Time.
Be consistent. All right, Dr. Van Epp,
no different.
Coming up on a break, I am thrilled by this. You have me on the edge of my seat. I'm sure the listeners as well. When
Is
we come back, I want to talk about the other
with spam with a Start Mail account. You'll never have to give your real email address to a stranger again. Online shopping, newsletter subscriptions, getting that 30% off coupon—they all need your email address. But with StartMail, you can invent new addresses or aliases linked to your inbox behind the scenes and give those out to people while keeping your real address hidden. It's just one more protection from StartMail.com.
Red alert, Yahoo users. You've fallen in a trap that could ruin your life if you keep using Yahoo.
You consent to sharing all data in your email account with our AI providers, and you grant us a perpetual license to use, display, publish, and publicly distribute your content in any media known now or in the future, and to let other users access and distribute it as well.
Yikes! It's time to switch to StartMail, the only email that's AI-free and private by design. StartMail.com. Use promo code JD.
I am the Lord who opened the way through the waters, making a dry path through the sea. I am the Lord who opened the way through the waters, making a dry path through the sea.
Oh. All right, we're back. Catherine Albrecht here. This hour, Dr. John Van Epp, talking to us about relationships. And Dr. Van Epp, just before the break, we were talking about the five elements that you need to look at. And I'm trying to remember, you said one of them was time. And help me out on the other. I think we talked about two of them before the break.
So I haven't given you any of the five yet, Catherine, but I gave you kind of the process. So I said that the process of getting to know these five areas requires talking. You have to be together with the person to see them in action, and then you have to do it over time. Because I didn't want you to think that you could just sit down and talk about these five areas in one sitting, and then you're done with them. And I said it's more like peeling an onion. You get to know a layer, and then as time goes on, which is one of the three T's of how to get to know somebody, that time moves you to the next layer and the next layer. So think of these as you keep coming back to getting to know them. It's not like just a one-time thing. So I'm going to give you them in the order of the book. So initially, you probably get to know a little bit. You go out with the person maybe for the first time. So let's say it's like the first encounter. There's automatically some compatibility you're getting to know. So because, a lot of the websites that, were used for dating and they had compatibility tests. What I found when I counseled way back when these first started coming out, nobody ever knew the 21 or 29 factors of compatibility. Nobody learned the factors of compatibility. So we put compatibility into just three major categories. How do you get to know their personality and how that personality clicks or matches with yours? how their strengths and weaknesses fit with your strengths and weaknesses. How do you get to know their values? Because values are very much part of the compatibility process. And then not just that, but their lifestyle, like some of the key areas of what they like to do and where they like to go. Are they an outgoing person, ingoing? So that's all compatibility. But there's an initial compatibility you almost feel right away. We call it the click factor. You sit down with somebody, you almost automatically have a sense of whether you're clicking. And even like that attraction, that chemistry can be part of the click factor as well. So that's the first area you're getting to know over time, not just in one moment of an encounter. The second area that I think is pretty obvious at the beginning, and you slowly start getting to know it more and more, is their skills. Like, how good of a communicator are they? How do they talk? How well do they listen? You know, what is their, you can't necessarily get to know their conflict resolution skills. I jokingly have told classes for years now, you know, on the first date, pick a fight. You know, see how they handle, how do they handle it when you have a fight? But that's ridiculous. You can't do that. That's just teasing them. The reality is, you know, you might go for a couple months, you know, before you even have a minor conflict. So time is so essential, but that area of their skills, how they manage themselves, kind of their emotional intelligence, how does that come out in the way they interact with you and their skillfulness with you? So those are two areas. The third is what we will call kind of their relationship track record. You know, forget about how they treat you. Let's look at how they treat everybody else. How do they treat their friends? How do they treat your friends? How do they treat their family members? If they meet yours, how do they interact and treat your family members? People don't always treat everybody the same. They have so many like scripts that they use, and they're different types of relationships. And so learning all of the different scripts oftentimes tells you what's going to be coming your way down the road that you haven't seen yet and how they interact with you. The fourth area is a big one, and that's their whole family upbringing. You know, what did they learn? How did they interact? It's not just what happened in the family, but I think that's important to know, but it's what they took out of those experiences in their family upbringing. You know, what did they do with it?
Sorry, we're...
Are we at another break?
Somehow we've got... Yeah, no, we don't. I don't know. Jack, we've got some music playing. Hang on. I don't know where that... There we go. Okay,
only,
sorry about
if
that.
If it only was a family song, it would have fit right in.
I know. All right.
But
so,
it wasn't. But yeah, their whole family experiences and what they took out of it is... and then the last area is an area that I didn't find anybody writing about and still is not talked about much at all is the conscience. So the conscience is a very dynamic... It's a very dynamic part. The New Testament talks about the conscience. The word conscience is not in the Hebrew language. The concept of conscience was there with the word heart. So when you read in the Old Testament about, you know, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. You know, it was the functioning of the conscience. It was like, I like the Greek word in the New Testament. That means the second mind. It's like you have one mind thinking and functioning in life, and you have another mind observing yourself and commenting and guiding your first mind. It's like it's the internal parent that guides you, that tells you, you know, you're doing it right, John, or John, you need to stop, or wow, you just blew it. It's what makes you feel guilty. It's what makes you feel affirmed. People do not have the same maturity or content of conscience. There are sociopaths that have no well-functioning conscience at all. There are people that have a very strong conscience, but the content is kind of like a mobster content, you know? They'll be true to the core and die for the mob, but they'll walk out and kill somebody the next day for the mob. So the content and the... You might say the self-monitoring are aspects of the conscience. When you're getting to know another partner, their conscience, what content drives it, how they monitor themselves when you're not around, is really, in a large extent, the basis of your understanding of empathy, you know, the kind of empathy you'll get from them, the kind of understanding, the kind of trust you can have in them when you're not around. All of that is wrapped up in the maturity and functioning of their conscience. And we need to teach singles how to get to know compatibility, a relationship track record, how to evaluate the proficiency of their skills, how to explore family upbringing and what they took out of it. And ultimately, we've got to teach them how do you get to know the maturity of somebody's conscience. Those five areas, when you put them together, will be like a crystal ball predicting what that person will be like for really, I would say, a lifetime to the large extent.
Love it. Love it. And that's really, that last one is what we used to call character or integrity. The is this person operating from a place of wanting to be good, or are they simply out for themselves? So all of this is critically important. We're not going to be able to get into tremendous amounts of detail. This is why I want to recommend that listeners purchase a copy of this book and read it. Give it to your kids. Give it to your sister-in-law who's going through a divorce, your sister, because she wouldn't be your sister-in-law. But, give it out to the people that you love and know are entering into relationships to try to set them on the right course so they make good decisions. All right. I want to open up the phone lines and allow people to speak to you directly, Dr. Van Epp. The number here is 877-536-1360. And I believe we have a caller on the line. I think, Ryan, are you with us?
Hi, my name's Ryan. Can you hear me?
Hi, Ryan. Go ahead. Yes,
yeah, you're on. I can hear you fine.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm in my late 30s, born and raised in Colorado, and I grew up in La Porte. Had a hard time dating, especially in my teenage years and in my early 20s. You know, I was kind of a party boy, so I was dating a lot of party girls and in the punk rock scene and stuff. And at one point in my life, I really cared about music. I started traveling around playing guitar and some funk bands, and I ended up doing okay. I had a bunch of relationships that went south before that, and I learned a lot from them. It wasn't just about who I was looking for in a partner, it was who I was looking to be myself, and I learned a lot about traits that I thought were exciting, whether it was an adventurous sexual relationship, or whether it was like being into the same stuff as me, or into the same scene as me, and things really kind of fell apart for me. But I learned a lot about when it wasn't just that I had a hard time trusting these girls, but when things started to push and pull, I had a hard time trusting myself. And I went on the road for a few years, and I ended up meeting a girl from Iran named Attica, and a Muslim girl, very devout in her faith, wears the hijab, but we had a great conversation. It all started when I started asking her questions about Islam, and I was curious about Islam extremism and terrorists and some of the stereotypes and child marriages, and she had interesting
so,
things
Ryan,
to say and all that.
We're going to be coming up on a break for just a sec. Do you have a question, a specific question for Dr. Van Epp? You're raising so
question.
Many
I'm
important
just,
issues.
I just wanted to say that I converted to Islam, and we base our relationship on the principles of the Quran. And I've been married now for 12 years, and she's my best friend and my life partner, and it's just a wonderful experience. I really enjoy the show, guys. Keep it up.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. Dr. Van Epp, I want to get your thoughts on cross-cultural compatibility and faith issues after this when we come back. Stay tuned.
I've been hearing a lot about the LifeWave patches, and they sound amazing. And I'm thinking I want to try them for myself. But can you tell me how they work?
You wear the patch, which is about the size of a quarter, 12 hours a day, 12 on, 12 off. And the patch uses your body's own light and energy and copper peptides to reactivate the dormant stem cells in your body. Once a stem cell has been reactivated, it can be used by any of the cells in your body that need it, creating a healing and growth process you haven't experienced since your youth. So in a nutshell, this is how the LifeWave X39 patch works.
You can purchase the LifeWave patches by going to AmericasFreedomNetwork.com. Then click on the Natural Health Products button at the top of the page. That's AmericasFreedomNetwork.com.
Look, this product works, and you've got nothing to lose because there's a 100% money-back guarantee.
That's AmericasFreedomNetwork.com. Thank you.
Like a cloud, I, the Lord, made you, and I will not forget you. I have swept away your sins like a cloud.
All right, we're back. Catherine Albrecht here with Dr. John Van Epp. Let me see if I can fix my window here just a little. I'm kind of new to doing this whole Zoom YouTube thing. Let's see if I can get everybody lined up. Okay, Dr. Van Epp, bear with me just for a minute while I get us lined up here in the window properly. Okay, I think I did it. All right, there we go. So before the break, we heard from caller Ryan, who called in to talk about finding love through a person of a completely different culture, different language, different faith. Does that usually work out? He says they've been married for 12 years and it sounds fantastic, like that's working for him. What about the rest of us? Should we be looking for people who are similar to ourselves or from a different background?
Well, there's a couple things I thought about. One was Ryan talked about throughout his 20s and even into his 30s, he had a lot of, you know, relationships that went south. And so the first thought I had in listening to him is that's the very thing that we want to help people avoid. You know, I know that we believe God can take experiences and work them together for good, but God can redeem, you know, pain and hurtful experience. But a lot of people that have the 20s and 30s where they don't do relationships well don't necessarily have a good outcome, and they struggle and they have a lot of pain. So we want to avoid that. And the second thing I thought of, even though his wife, who came from Iran and has a Muslim faith, is a different faith than me, she does, in that faith, they do follow a system. And there are some similarities between that system of how they would follow dating relationships and choose a partner, and even what we would believe from a Christian faith. One is that the sexual intimacy, the sexual relationship is a sacred part of marriage. Mm. And so you get to know somebody, you build a like, you know, understanding and bond with that person apart from developing the sexual side, so that it comes, you know, the sexual aspect comes into the committed, you know, flourishing relationship that exists in the marriage. And so I would say that there are some differences there, but I think when I listen to him, I'm like, well, that's a lot of what we're talking about. Let's prevent a lot of heartache. And that leads me kind of I said there's the head and the heart. So I gave you the five areas to get to know, but the heart, really, I developed a model to depict what exactly a relationship is. You know, if we're supposed to build a healthy relationship, we better have a good construct of what exactly is a relationship. And a relationship is a bond. So I identified the five major universal bonds that comprise relationship and put them in a visual called the relationship attachment model and said, hey, this is a great tool that we can use to kind of evaluate how we are guarding our heart and bonding with this person. So the five areas to kind of give them, because I know we're going to run out of time, Catherine, pretty quickly. Starting on That's the left side, if you think of it like the old stereo face where you have a graphic equalizer or a sliders that go, or mixing board where you have sliders going up and down, from left to right, it's what you know about the person. The second one is how you trust them. That's a slider that goes up and down. And then reliance is the third one. That's how you meet their needs or they meet your needs. The fourth one is your commitment level. And the fifth one is touch, which would be affectionate, friendly touch, but it could also be sexual touch, depending on the nature of the relationship. So know, trust, rely, commit, and touch. And the principle I put in the book is when you're forming a new relationship, here are the five areas to get to know. Think of it like a drop-down box under the first slider on the left. Here are the areas to get to know, these five areas. But the basic principle of the heart is don't let a bond go higher than any to the left. Don't trust them way higher than what you know. Let what you get to know set the ceiling of your trust. Don't rely on them to meet your needs. Don't like start pouring yourself into the relationship and meeting their needs and taking care of them or having them take care of you. Don't make that reliance go way up without the know and the trust first coming up. Watch your commitment. Be careful of relationships that don't have any commitment. Be careful of relationships where the commitment goes up really fast and you like drop all your friends. You don't do anything except with this person. And all of a sudden you're now kind of like building your whole world around this person that you don't even know and haven't developed any kind of trust. And finally, the touch. Obviously, don't go farther in that than the know, trust, rely, and the commitment. Let those things set the ceiling of your touch. And that's really the system that Ryan probably followed with an Iranian that would be kind of in their culture having a similar system. I think it's the system that guarantees a lot of guarding of the heart, and it's the five areas to get to know that help to direct you toward the right conversations, toward the right areas, to really, you might say, increase discernment. We need to teach people in the dating relationship, how do you be non-judgmental, but how do you also be very discerning? So I agree we need to get our act together, but we have to match our own personal growth with a system of how to build a relationship by guarding the heart and focusing on the right areas to get to know. And when you do that, I think you actually promote character. I think Ryan was basically saying his life got better when he got into a structured relationship where he was actually following some of these same principles we're talking about right now.
Now, before the break, character. You and I were talking, and you mentioned some statistics on people who have been sexually involved before marriage and people who more followed it's not just your set of structures, but the traditional set of structures where sexuality does not occur at the beginning of a relationship. Can you share some of that research with us?
You know, they've been doing this research for decades, and there's just one that came out in 20, it was either 25 or right at the end of 24. So just the most recent research we can cite, one of the largest studies on premarital, meaning before marriage, sexual practices, and marriage outcomes. And so they were looking at people that were married and how satisfied they were in their marriage. And what they found is with those that had no sexual partner, no sexual kind of interaction with the person they ended up marrying or anybody else, they rated the highest satisfaction in their marriage. And for every sexual partner, it was a 4% decrease. So if they had one sexual partner, it dropped from the percentage down 4%, 2%, 8%, 3%, 12%. And this was just another example of research, not looking at divorce, but looking at relationship confidence and satisfaction. And it's so contrary to what I think is mainstream culture's opinion, what they really promote. And I hate to say it, but even in, go do a search on dating, you know, healthy dating system, you'll find all kinds of bad information from PhDs and MDs out on the internet saying, hey, you got to have sex within the first two or three dates, contrary to all existing published research. I don't know of any research that has supported that. And I've been studying it, as you know, for about 30 years and gathering the research and organizing it. I have literally thousands of studies that I've cataloged over the years. And they all really support a very conservative approach to taking time, getting to know the right areas, holding off on ways of bonding, like with sexual intimacy, and just building what would ultimately be a friendship. I'll tell you one quick story. I was honored to be kind of like the, I don't know what you'd call it, the semi-producer brought in as an expert on a filming that was done, a documentary that was done on happy marriages. And so I came up, they wanted me to come up with a list of questions to ask the couples, you know, what helped you, you know, what helped you to have a happy marriage? Because I was trying to do a documentary on what produces happy marriages. So I had people that are married just for a year, or people that are married 50 plus years. So I had one question I asked every single person. What's the number one, you know, characteristic of your relationship that you would say is needed that gives you the highest degree of satisfaction, happiness, and fulfillment?
What was it?
Pretty much everyone said, we have a really deep, solid friendship. They didn't say sex. Interestingly, I had no one say that. But solid, deep friendship was something that went on. And that's something that you can develop within a very romantic. My wife and I were like extremely attracted to each other, but we set boundaries. And for 2 years, we built a really solid, deep friendship. And we'll be pushing our 50th anniversary in just a couple years. So we've been really, really blessed with 2 daughters, 6 grandkids. And a wonderful, wonderful relationship for now almost 50 years. And it's because
fantastic.
We followed the principle. So,
where can people find more? What? Give us your websites and where
if they go on Love Thinks, Love, L-O-V-E, Thinks.com or MyLoveThinks.com. They will find resources in both those places. For their learning, as well as if they want to teach others.
Thank you. So that's LoveThinks, thinks.com. Dr. John Van Epp, thank you so much for being my guest this hour. We learned a lot, and I'd love to get you back on. All right.
Great
God bless you,
Dr. Catherine.
And blessings to all the listeners as well. Thank you so much. All right. We'll see you guys on Monday. Have a blessed week.